Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and my very own yellow flag. It's Dave Vitti.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance.
Now, don't forget to press subscribe on your YouTube so that you'll never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Dave, how are you, mate?
I'm very good, thank you. Yourself?
Oh, do you know what? I feel a bit cacky today, actually.
Do you?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I don't feel at my best.
Well, do you know what? That's not given over by your general appearance, because I was just going to say that you look lovely today. Your hair in particular looks really nice.
Well, the leftover tequila I had from last night I've used as a balm on my hair. Maybe that's why I'm not feeling so well.
Well, absolutely. But no, it suits you. It all looks good. And I think, do you know what? I think it's not just me that will appreciate the beauty that you're giving off. I think that our special guest today as well will also notice how tremendous you look.
Well, let's hope so. We'll find out, won't we? Mm. So our special guest today is a lady who is quite simply supremely rapid behind the wheel of just about anything. And I've known that firsthand because I've seen her race in the flesh many, many a time. She's a two-time British champion with over two decades of racing experience under her belt, having competed in go-karts, touring cars, Formula 3, Porsches, the lot. It is, of course, my old mate, the wonderful Abby Eaton. How are you, darling?
I'm good, thanks. I was going to say I'm joined special guest Elvis.
Abby and Elvis.
In no time, yeah. I have to watch him, make sure he doesn't knock the bumming trophies off.
I was just watching him then, actually, because he was doing that cat thing of just... They're incredible the way that they can walk between things like that, can't they, without knocking anything over.
Yeah, until they don't want to, and then they end up bashing it on the floor. But yeah, I'll keep my eyes on the screen and see if I hear him and see him about to bash something off.
Well, the thing is, we can do it a bit like Panto, Abby, because we can do the whole he's behind you thing, you know, and kind of like do all that all the way through.
He'll be joining in front at some point, I imagine.
Oh, fantastic. So it's Elvis, yeah? We've got to look out for Elvis.
That's it,
but
yeah.
We must have seen all those little kind of memes and things online with cats, where there'll be a cat on like the kitchen worktop, and he'll just be looking at something, and then he'll just put his paw out and just kind of go, and knock it off on purpose.
Yeah, whilst looking directly in your eyes.
Yeah.
That's him.
I must admit, I don't... Oh, what's the balloons? Is your birthday?
What did I do there? Yeah,
I have no
how
idea.
How do I make it happen again?
I don't know, but suddenly there was just all balloons came out.
Are you on an Apple Mac?
No, I'm on an iPhone. Yeah.
Maybe. Oh, you're on the iPhone.
God, what did I do?
I don't know.
I don't know, but suddenly there was these sort of celebratory balloons came up, which I don't know. I like it.
What can I say? I just bring a party with me wherever I go, obviously.
It's all good. And talking of parties, so obviously you and Jason know each other from old, from your careers on the racetrack. Where did your paths first cross? Because I'm not aware of this story.
Do you know what? I think it was just in being in the same paddocks. Obviously, JP's got a fairly... large reputation with him.
Strong nose.
You know, yeah, strong nose, I say. And yeah, you know, he's such a character, and growing up watching touring cars and stuff like that, you know, I think it's really important to have like a bit of character to you as a driver. Mm. You know, you see a lot of people, and I think probably more kind of recently, people are not allowed to be themselves, really. Yeah. And take, you know, people love people and people watching. And that's what I really enjoyed watching JP with the racing, that he, yeah, a bit of pantomime behind him. And I like that about him.
Well, I'll tell you where I remember us most having fun is on that TV series with Vernon Kay, Drive.
Oh, and Drive, yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, that was very... I remember it being very muddy and very cold.
It was horrific, what wasn't it? But really interesting. I don't know if you ever saw that show, Dave.
No, I did. I saw bits of it.
I was the mentor who all the way through the series wanted to be joint anchor with Vernon. So I managed to muscle my way in a bit. But we basically just got a load of celebs, and Abby was like a team leader. Who was your celeb? I can't remember.
Professor Green.
That was it. Who went on to win?
He did, yeah. We managed to win it. And, there's so many different characters. I mean, we had Louis Walsh.
Johnny Vegas.
Yeah, Johnny Vegas. And they were chucked in to the most random challenges of various kind of motorsport categories. And we were basically there to be their driver coach and kind of hold their hand through it. And yeah, it was
hilarious at times, wasn't it? Absolutely
hilarious. The
tantrums
were great. And that was from the instructors as well, really, because we were cold and needed a brew.
Yeah, yeah. But it was a massive production, eh? We had catering wagons, I mean, crew buses, motorhomes, all that sort of stuff. It was a proper thing.
Mm. And of course, the best driver and coach won.
Without a doubt. So that's where it all stems back from. And like Abby says, you know, years bumping into each other in the paddock while Arthur was behind the bike sheds having a fag.
Oh, absolutely. So take us back. So in terms of the motor racing bug then, Abby, where does that come from for you? Is that something that was passed down through the family?
Yeah, so my dad always raced ever since he was a kid. So started on like grass track bikes, moved into crazy stupid go-karts. So he'd race 250 national go-karts and stuff like that. Oh, yeah, he was proper bonkers. And I just grew up around it, really, you know, taking to racetracks from, you know, in a pushchair, grew up. Watch, you know, they were there in my home. So circuits of the UK were my home and where I felt, you know, most at ease. And from about probably the age of 8 onwards, all I was doing was pestering my dad to basically let me start or at least have a go in a go-kart.
Yeah.
And I think my dad was still racing at the time. So actually he probably didn't have a lot of time to be able to allow me to do that. And then his kind of last sponsorship deal was coming to an end. And I think then at that time he thought, okay, let's go see how she gets on. And he got me a go-kart age 10. And
wow.
Yeah, this is my 23rd year now. So I've done it a fair while.
Wowza. So in terms of, I mean, you started off in karting 100 seat, because back then, I mean, I'm saying back then, God, I'm doing it again. I'm getting myself in all sorts of trouble. But there was no clutches. There was no clutches back then. So there were direct drive 100cc carts. Yeah, proper racing carts.
Yes. Yeah, so, well, the first, my first one was a Coma Cadet. So it's pretty easy, straightforward little thing. And then it was when we moved into the world of Rotax, where you actually had a button to start it. So, you know, much easier for my dad rather than having to like push me and, you know, pull to start everything. So I did Junior Max, or I did Mini Max, which was, what was the age there? 11 to 15, I think.
Then
from 16 onward, or I think 14 to 16, you'd go in Junior Max and then you'd go Senior Max. But I'm quite tall, I'm 5'10".
Yeah.
And back when I was younger, you know, you have basically the lighter you can be in the car where the weight limit is, the better. And because I was tall, I was always maybe 2-3 kilos overweight. And the money that we're actually spending to do the national karting, we could move up into cars. And there was a championship at the time called Sax Max, which is now the Junior Saloon Championship. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, Dad fancied a bit of a change. He'd been researching it. And I remember him saying, I was in the kitchen at the time, and he was like, What do you feel about doing cars? It's Sax Max, it's Citroen Saxo. And I remember being like, Dad, I can't drive on the road yet. Like, how do I change gear? And he was like, oh, we'll teach you.
Brilliant.
And then, you know, my dad built this car, and I think I was 15 when I had my first go in it, and I absolutely loved it. Like, I felt so much more at home in a car than I ever did in a car.
Did you really? That's interesting.
Yeah. I was going to say that's interesting, because I would have thought that a car was just a lot more sort of snug and feeling, I don't know, just easier all round. But
I just like the feel of the car moving around underneath me, you know, and having to manipulate the car. Like, you know, a kart is very kind of digital. Everything is very precise movements and so on. Similar to if you go in a single seater and you know, sports cars and so that kind of stuff. But like touring cars, saloon cars, that kind of a vibe, which is my dad used to race in Eurocars, which was like space frame chassis with a Ford Mondeo body kit on top. And I just like having to hustle the car. And, you know, that's why I love driving in the wet. Whereas in karting, I used to hate the wet. I remember I used to drive to like racetracks if it was going to rain, being like,
no way, really.
Looking out the window, like, please no. And now I would love every race to be wet. I love it.
So back then, I guess, I mean, it's still a little bit like it now, although it is improving. But back then, I guess probably you were the only girl, or maybe there might be another. Would that be true to say?
There was probably a count on like one hand, the amount of females in the kind of country. Alice Powell, she was, you know, kind of doing it at the same time as me. Sarah Moore was as well, and the Moore family, obviously, her and all her brothers and sisters, they're all Carters. And Laura Tillett, if you know that name. So Tillett Racing Seats, Steve's daughter, Laura, she was my best friend at the time. So, and there's maybe one or two others kind of around the paddocks. But if you look now, you know, 20 odd years on, there are a lot more females in karting.
Which is a great thing.
100%. And I think it carries through into, we've seen a lot more females in F4 and so on. Now that there's the W Series and the F1 Academies of the world, you know, I think females have a little bit more excitement about motorsport. Whereas back then it was, you know, I was lucky. I had a family kind of connection to it. So there was no escaping it.
So come on, here's the golden question. Who will be the first female F1 driver out of the current crop which are out there? Do you see anyone, you know?
Yeah, I reckon it could be Luna Fluxer. So she's Mercedes Junior.
Yes,
incredibly competitive in karting. A lot of wedge behind her, which is what we need. She's got the right people around her. And she's fast. She is fast. So, but yeah, she's got a lot of Wonga behind her. So the thing that I really just hope that happens is the right person gets that opportunity.
Yeah. Yes.
Because in the past, there's been people that have been kind of given more PR opportunities. Mm. And I just think it does more harm than good. You know, we want the right girl who's quick enough, talented enough, and, you know, feisty enough to make it happen. And I hope that's her.
Do you know, we had this conversation, didn't we, Jason, with Jamie Chadwick a little while ago, and we were talking about the fact, and she said exactly the same thing, the fact that it needs to be the right person, because what you don't want anybody is to be that sort of token person that's sort of put in there to change things, because then, as you say, you do more harm than good, because it needs
it ruins
to be
the credibility. Yeah,
absolutely. It's all about credibility, so it's got to be the right person. And, you know, one would hope that when that time comes, and hopefully it comes sort of soon, that actually having that real top of the pile role model will make such a difference for more women coming through in the early days.
And I think, you know, it's helpful in terms of marketing and stuff if they're, you know, we tick all those silly boxes from back in the day, if they're attractive, if they speak well, all that kind of stuff. That, you know, you want, whether they're male or female, you know, you want them to be a really good brand that they can kind of appeal to lots of sponsors and so on. Elvis, I don't know if you can hear him trying to giving his opinion.
He's agreeing.
Yeah, what do you think, Elvis? So I think it's not going to be in the kind of next couple of years, but I think certainly in the next kind of 5 years, I hope that at least there are some more opportunities being given. Mm. Obviously, my ex-partner, Jessica Hawkins, she had to go in the Aston Martin F1 car a couple of years ago now. And, you know, she was competitive in the test as well. And it wasn't as though, you know, it was a huge jump from the experience that she'd been given before. So, you know, I think it is doable, but obviously, as we all know, Formula One is stupid expensive. And, you know, I think for people to really give that opportunity to a female driver, I think she has to be something special. And I think she needs a lot of Wonga behind her as well.
You know the way how motorsport generally, this is a question to both of you, I suppose, motorsport generally can be very sort of cost prohibitive to get into just because there's so much money involved, even down to karting to an extent, and it can be beyond the realms of people. Is that a situation that's getting better or worse as we go on? You know, is it harder now for kids to get into motorsport, you know, two decades on, Abby, or, you know, was it easier in your day?
It's getting harder and harder and harder. Mm. You know, now you see, you know, question about karting. To do a European season in karting for like a 12-year-old, I could race in Porsche Carrera Cup for a season. Yeah. It's absolutely bonkers. You know, we're talking 200, 300 grand to being spent on go-karting. Mm. And, you know,
it's out of shape, isn't it?
It's just bonkers. And the problem is, I don't think it's ever going to change now. I think it's just on that kind of movement. And it's only going to get worse. And, you know, I think back in the day, motorsport, it always has to, you know, succeed as a business, because ultimately people need wages and need paying and so on. Mm. But I think there was still quite a big element that it was still a sport, whereas it's now getting more and more that actually it is purely a business, an entertainment business, and the sport is just getting kind of less and less, which is a real shame. As I say, I don't think we can, it's a runaway train now.
I would agree. Totally agree. It's so expensive, and it is totally cost prohibitive for anything other than very, very wealthy families, or families that have got great connections with business. In fact, I would say it's probably cost prohibitive for even the wealthy fat families, because it's just telephone numbers, isn't it?
Can you hear him? Shut up, Elvis.
Oh, do you know what? He's got an Elvis look about him, hasn't he?
He's got blue eyes. Yeah, I'm trying to work, okay? Just be quiet.
He's like, I'm not bothered. It's all about me now.
He looks a bit like you, Jason.
What with my furry mane?
Hairy ears.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. Abby, talk to us about the Grand Tour, because, you know, you did that as a test driver on there. That surely was a dream job for somebody with your background, wasn't it? How did that come about?
Yeah, a bit bonkers, really. And you almost still have to pinch yourself today, really. It came through an email, which initially I thought, which one of my cruel friends has, done this?
They were winding you up.
I thought I was being pranked. I'm like, it looks very official. So kind of went along with it. And, you know, the initial email was, you know,
was it from Wilman?
No, it wasn't. It was from one of the researchers, I think.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember who it was exactly, but they basically said, you know, would you come down? We just want you to do some laps in a few of the cars we've got here, you know, come to the Velodrome, which was the circuit they use. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't really say much more than that. And so I said, okay, yeah, cool, I'll come down. And, you know, on arrival, it was pretty obvious that it was basically lap times. You had to, they said there's lap times set in these cars, so can you jump in and drive and see, you know, how quick you can get to the lap times? And I'm like, yeah. Okay. Are you going to tell me the lap times? Nope. All right. And it was in a time where I'd basically run out of funding, talking about how expensive motorsport is. So I wasn't racing at the time. And, you know, I just viewed this as an opportunity to, you know, potentially do something more and, you know, TV opportunities, maybe create then racing opportunities and ultimately, you know, add a bit of value to the Abby Eaton brand. And also, it's bloody cool to do something like that. I turned up, again, kind of felt, oh, I'm just going to do quali laps. If I'm in the trees, I'm in the trees, but this is an opportunity I've got to kind of take with both hands. And thankfully, I was pretty fast, got invited to go down again, a little bit longer at the track, a bit more kind of high-powered performance cars, same process. And then a couple of weeks later, got invited down to the office in London and had a meeting with Wilman. And yeah, he basically said, look, this is what we want you to do. Brilliant. Are you up for it?
How cool is that?
Yeah, I think I am. So working with obviously the three boys that I've kind of looked up to since I was a kid. You know, it was pretty household. Every Sunday night, you'd be sat watching TV with your mum and dad watching Top Gear.
That must have been bonkers though, mustn't it? I mean, just really, really surreal. You know, despite obviously all your success on track, but at the end of the day, you know, as you just sort of said, you know, you watched Top Gear the same as all of us did. And then to find yourself almost in the program, I know it's obviously Grand Tour, but essentially in the program with those three that we've watched for decades, must have just been mental.
Yeah, it was just really, I felt real privileged to be given the opportunity. And actually, you know, obviously it's a big thing for effectively giving the Stig's job to a female and a female driver that's kind of, you know, not hidden either. And, you know, I was thinking there was probably going to be quite a lot of positivity, but I thought there was going to be more negativity about the opportunity.
And how was it? Yeah.
And majority. And
it was good.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I think there was 1% where it was negative. And actually mum, bless her, hunted to find those comments, and actually they were very, very comical, and I prefer reading those comments to the nice ones.
<Couldn't have.
laughs> I'm like, come on, what have you got this time? Oh, it's the same old comments.
Presumably you must have gone on some good trips.
Yeah, so probably my favorite trip with them was when we went to Sweden and we went to the ice lakes out there.
Yes.
And
it's amazing, isn't it?
Well, it's, if you ever get the opportunity to do anything ice driving related to anyone, like 100%, I'd just say you have to do it, even if it's a once in a lifetime thing. Like it genuinely is.
Have you done it, Dave? Have you
been on the ice? No, never. I've seen stuff. In fact, isn't there a big Concours show that's in Switzerland, I think, and they go driving on Lake Geneva or something?
Oh, I don't know.
That sounds good.
I've seen people driving on ice and it looks fantastic. Yeah. But I mean, but even for you, Abby, that must be something that, you know, you've not been trained to do that, presumably. That's something that you have to kind of like, you know, feel as you go along because, you know, you told me before about driving in the wet and stuff like that on go-karts, but ice is a whole different ball game.
Yeah, it's just like the wet, but slippier. And it's actually really, like I say to a lot of drivers that I coach and so on, that the best thing you can do if you want to try and get comfortable with a car and get on top of the car quickly, go and do some car control. Ice driving is quite expensive, but you can kind of simulate something similar on a wet grip surface skid pan, exactly. Yeah. Because the quicker you can kind of get that muscle memory with what to do and how to react to a car and physics of each of the different types of cars, the quicker you'll rise up to where you need to be. And actually, when I started instructing in 2012, I think that's when my driving kind of took a bit of a jump up. And it was because sitting in the passenger seat at, you know, places like Palmer Sport and so on, the drivers that are kind of not used to doing it, they do the most random stuff and they'll put themselves in the most random positions. And you've got to sort it out from the passenger seat. Or if you can't sort it out, you think, oh, okay, right, that's what happens when, you know, and I learned a lot from learning from other people's mistakes.
Yeah, but on the ice, the technique of being so delicate and gentle, you're almost like trying to coax the car to turn or to rotate. It's joyous, isn't it?
Yeah, I describe it as dancing with the car. You're dancing with the car. Right. You know, it's not like 1 + 2 = 3. You know, or you have to. Everything is like how much input you put on the wheel is related to your throttle, to how quick you've gone on it, how long it's. You know, it's a real art, and you know, I think the professional drifters and stuff like that, I think like they're so cool.
Yeah.
And you know, rally drivers. God, I'm not a chance. Have you ever done rallying, JP?
Not competitively. I've obviously done some filming round a proper rally stage with that lunatic noodles. Thank God I was in the driving seat because I would have hated it otherwise.
No.
But I mean, that's. I mean, I personally think they're the finest drivers in the world. I think the rally drivers.
Yeah, I agree. And at least on an ice lake, if you go off, you go into some snow. So it's a pretty safe place to learn in as well.
Yeah.
It's interesting when you describe it as being like dancing, Abby, because it is, it's all a sort of, it's a flowing movement, isn't it? You know, when you think about, I never really thought about that before, but you know, it's not sort of stop, start, or sort of, you know, jagged kind of movements. It is a sort of continuous flow, isn't it? Which is like dancing because, you know, and as you say, the tiniest little input that you put on the car in terms of the steering or the throttle or whatever is just going to change that glide and change that overall movement.
And when I coach people on the skid pan, that is the exact word I use. I say you've got to be fluid with the car. You know, you can't be clamped on the wheel. You can't, you know, you just have to have finesse and feel. And that's what, you know, to an extreme, driving in the wet is that kind of a vibe.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously in ice, it's just, there's no grip or traction or anything.
Have you driven on ice with long studs?
Yeah. That's what we had. Massive.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
The grip level is ridiculous.
The braking is phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was in a 911 at the time as well, so obviously with the physics of that, the traction was even better.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, actually, they slow down faster, braking sidewards, because then the front wheels aren't chewing up the ice, which the rear wheels will go over. So they always brake slightly sidewards. So you've got four sets of studs all digging in. And it slows down not far off. It probably slows down more... quicker than on a wet tarmac.
And we're talking that these studs are like massive.
The monsters, aren't they?
Yeah.
You've got to do it, Dave. Come on, let's get it booked up.
I'd love to do that.
Let's get it booked up as an away day for fueling around.
Can we do that? Can we organise a school trip?
Yeah, come
can
on.
Can I supervise?
Yeah, of course you can. Absolutely.
You can instruct.
The thing is, like Abby, you'll be the nominated grown-up for the day, right? Because that's the way it works. That's the way it works with us on school trips, is that we're not allowed to do it unless we get it signed off by a proper grown-up, which I think in this case can be you.
That's fine. Yep, I'll take that responsibility. I'm not sure too much about taking responsibility, JP, but someone's going to do it, so I'll do it. I'll be brave.
Rude.
True though, isn't it? People have been trying to control you for decades, JP.
Well, I do get excitable occasionally. Do you know what I mean? And ice would tip me over the edge.
Abby, so listen, this might be an impossible question, but when you look at all you've achieved in your career and then you look at the telly stuff as well, like Grand Tour, et cetera, et cetera, what are you most proud of when you look back at where you are just now?
I think in terms of like a race or a moment that will, you know, if I could bottle it up.
Yeah, and maybe even if there was like a sort of picture on your mantelpiece or something like that, what would be the photo? What's that moment that you're just like, that was the ultimate?
Would it be, can I butt in, would it be a circuit near Northampton? Would it be an event?
Oh,
there?
No. Do you know what? That would, it would have been, I think I've got, downstairs, I have got a photo of that. But no, it's something actually that probably isn't that well publicised, kind of, because it was in club motorsport. So it was 2014 and I was racing in MX5 Super Cup. And it was the last year that I raced in the family run team. So my dad would built the car, was running it and so on. Mum was making, you know, bacon sarnies and all the important stuff.
Head of catering was Mum.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. And we basically, it came down to the very last race of the season and I was leading the championship by about 17 points. Coming to the last race, think, okay, I just need to be careful, you know, be sensible. Don't need to reinvent the wheel or anything daft. And we'd had a full year of no technical issues. Mm-hmm. And then they all decided to kind of come out in that last round. So I didn't finish race one, but we run on drop scores. So basically we dropped that rubbish finish and picked up points for my next best, which I think was sixth place. And then because I didn't finish race one, and the reason why I didn't finish race one was because my engine let go, we then overnight had to source another engine. So Donington Park, down the road, there's a salvage scrapyard, and my dad kind of called up and they had a bashed up MX5. Engine was still running. Mm-hmm. Yep, right, we'll come and get it.
Wow.
And it was about 1,500 quid. And I remember having this conversation with my dad because, we're not for money or anything. And I was like, look, I don't want you spending 1,500 quid because we haven't got that money. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, I'm going to need to repair it to sell it anyway. So either we spend the money now and you could still win, or, you know, we don't and you don't win, but I'm still going to have to spend it. So we went down, picked up this car, and they spent all night swapping the engines, and race two had to start from the back of the grid. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, oh yeah, you know what it's like when you're chasing a championship. You know, you're focused, no mistakes. You know, you don't actually really enjoy it. You know, because you're so hunting for that win. And I just said to my dad, I was like, look, whatever happens, happens. I'm just going to enjoy this race because, you know, I haven't all year. And, you know, when you're driving at your best, you're having fun and enjoying it. Mm-hmm. So set off. You know, back of the grid, carving my way through everyone. And I just needed to finish basically behind the guy that was second in the championship. And he was currently, I think, in like fourth place. So I actually got up behind him and I thought, right, sweet, I'll just sit here now. Like, I was like, I'm not, like, I've had so much bad luck. I'm just going to sit behind him because he was battling with someone. I was like, then they can take it to the row. I'll just hang out here. And with
thinking there's going to be a mistake at some point, which is going to be your opportunity.
Yeah, but I didn't need to pass him. I could have just sat there and won the championship. But one of the guys that I'd previously overtaken, who we'd swapped places a couple of times, and he'd actually pointed me through at one point, he, into Redgate, wiped me out, smashed me off the track, spun me round. And I just thought, well, the video is actually on YouTube. All this emotion of the weekend of, you know, I'm going to win, I'm not going to win, you know, all... And it all just came out of me and I'm like punching the wheel, I'm screaming, I'm shouting, my hands are all black from like punching stuff. Tried to carry on, but the car was broken. So coming to the pits, burst out crying. I'm like, you know, I can't believe it's just been taken away from me. Mm. And then I kind of was stood in the Parc Fermé waiting for this race to finish. And I remember my uncle, who was a team manager, came up to me and he's like, look, he has to win this race to basically be equal on points with you.
Right.
You have got the fastest lap at the moment. So with this engine that was just a bog standard engine, I've managed to get the fastest lap. And that basically gave me an extra point to put me 1 point in front, and I won the championship.
How brilliant is that?
And there's a photo of me and my dad when we were given the news, and you know, we're arm, you know, wrapped around each other.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You can see my dad's face, the emotion on his face, and you know, that is, if I could bottle up feeling and sell it, I would be very, very wealthy. And you know, that feeling is something I'll never forget.
And also, it's the roller coaster, isn't it, of that day.
Yeah. That's, and the full season, you know, it was an incredible year. There was 38 cars on the grid. So, you know, it was a very competitive championship.
Wow.
And yeah, to kind of go, as you say, at the weekend thinking, yeah, I'll win. Just got to, you know, keep it under wraps. Don't do anything daft. And then everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And yeah, it was a special moment to still get the title.
Do you know, it's moments like that, though, Abby, as well, whereby I can imagine it's when you realise it's such a team effort. And I mean, you know, especially with all of your family involved as well, your dad, your mum, you kind of realise how much everybody's carrying, I would imagine. You know, it's sort of all of the stresses and the strains, and not just on your shoulders, obviously, because they love you dearly and they want you to do your very best. Is that at that moment, that must have come out from everybody. You know?
Yeah. My parents said it took them about a month to recover. It took me, it felt like 6 months, because I got such a stinking hangover. I just was like, oh my God. Of course, as you do, as you win a championship, I can't remember how old I was, 21 or something, went out on the night and had a great time. But God, it was, what a feeling.
So Dave, what I was alluding to before about the circuit in Northamptonshire, it's basically Silverstone I'm on about. It was last year. What was it, Abby? Abby drove in the Porsche Carrera Cup, the UK Cup, which is a supremely competitive, world class series, and you blew them apart, didn't you? You just wiped the floor.
Yeah, it was.
I remember watching it, going, "Oh my God!"
Yeah, and we'd done so with the Silverstone round, because it's kind of middle of the year. You do a test day on, I think, the Tuesday and the Thursday leading up to it. And we knew we had a bit of pace going into the testing, and it's what is now my home track. I've instructed there at the school for many years. So I've done a ridiculous amount of laps around the national, and it's four corners. There's not much to get.
It's tricky though, isn't it? It's not easy to get a lap time around there.
No, it's because it's four corners, and you have to just be precise, so precise with everything. And there's obviously long straights out of, Maggots, Beckett's, Herpin. And that means that whatever series is racing on it, they're always really close together. And, you know, you're half a tenth is the difference between, being first or being fifth or sixth. Mm. And we went into testing kind of top five, top six kind of pace, but we hadn't actually gone new rubber yet. And, I think it was like a tenth, two tenths I was looking for. So I was like, okay, right, we might be in a good shot here. And I was thinking, if I'm in the top five, I'll be chuffed to bits. And then quali turned up, and you basically run two new sets of rubber. And the first new set, I think we went up to P2, and then I think it was P3 we dropped down to. Second set, I was like, okay, let's just, same, let's just be precise with everything. And my team were stood on the pit wall, but they were quite near to the end of the pit lane. So Cops is a really fast right-hander, so you can't see. I couldn't see the pit board. So I'm like, driving, these things are pretty quick, and I'm trying to like glance over and see what was on my pit board as to, how many temps I needed to find or position. And completed one lap, and I was like, I'm sure that was like P single number. I'm like, okay, but I don't know what it was. Completed the next lap, and then into Cops, it had rained, so I went fully sideways, off and all the runoff. And I'm like, right, okay, that's that done. Like, no one else is going to go quick, or unless they complete this lap, I don't think anyone else is going to go quicker. I'm like, I just don't know where I was, but it's good, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And then came down the pit lane, and because I didn't want to celebrate, because I was like, I don't know. Came down the pit lane, and my friend was stood at the end with a pit board, like in the air, like, yeah, and it said P1. So qualified on pole position, first pole in Carrera Cup, first kind of female to do so as well. And, the reaction of the drivers was really, really lovely. About 10 of the lads were kind of stood when I got out of the car, coming up, congratulating me.
Oh, that's nice, eh?
It was, it was mega, really, really nice. And obviously that was in beautiful dry conditions. The next day, Sunday turns up, and it's absolutely chucking it down.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, I've not done a wet lap around here in this thing yet, and I've got to start the race on pole and hope that I can, you know, the car's going to handle as I want it to, and that I'm quick enough. Thankfully I was, and finished second in race one, lobbed it off, didn't I? Aquaplanes coming out of Luffield while I was in the lead, pushing because I could see him catching me up. Mm. It was Charles Rainford, who actually has just announced he's doing touring cars. And he was pulling me in. And so I'm like, right, he's finding pace somewhere. So I it was just a metre later when we looked on the data and it locked up.
Is that what it
went
was? Wow.
Just into the gravel, back on again, finished second. And actually what we've worked out now is towards the end of the race, I was getting quicker. So I think his pressures just came up quicker. He had more pace at the start. I had more at the end. So had I just kept my cool, I think actually we would have just balanced out. So with that kind of, you know, hindsight, in race two, kept my cool and thankfully brought home the win. So that is my second favorite moment that I've had in my career so far.
I was shouting. In fact, the whole of Sir Silverson was.
It, honestly, the reaction was, it was insane. It was like I'd won a championship. You know, it was like 20 people deep, you know, trying to come and say hi and congrats. And everyone was absolutely buzzing. And to be able to, you know, it's been a tough few years since W Series, when I had the accident that broke my back. There's been a lot of work behind the scenes trying to get my head back in the right place to be able to kind of be competitive again. And, you know, at that moment, I was like, you know, it is working and we are going in the right direction, and you know, mum and dad were there and everything again, so it's a little bit like full circle, and just fantastic I had the opportunity to do so.
I want to ask you a little bit about that, Abby, if you don't mind. Just before we do it though, quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. In terms of what you just mentioned with the accident, you know, the bad accident in the W Series where you broke your back, how much of an effect does that have on you as a driver mentally? I mean, obviously there's huge physical, effect on your body, but in terms of your head, how does that affect you? Because does that then suddenly make you, I don't know, perhaps more aware of your own vulnerability or your own mortality or whatever the right word is, you know, can it affect your bottle and your general sort of headspace?
Yeah, so before I broke my back, I would have said no. Mm. You know, I've been in crashes and bumps before, and you know, you dust yourself off and you're like, all right, it's just part of it. You know, who doesn't like watching a good crash? Like crash compilations, that's why we all sit glued to them. I've had a few knocks before, but nothing where I've really hurt myself, you know, broken arm and stuff in karting. But it was it wasn't even I would call a crash. I just ran over a sausage curb, which, you know, piece of kind of furniture, track furniture.
Yeah.
And it was in the States. So, you know, everyone in the States loves to do things bigger and better than anywhere else. So these curbs were absolutely ginormous. Mm. And with the single seater, you're obviously strapped to this carbon tub. So all the kind of shock of it just went straight up through my back. And that's where I kind of fractured it. And, you know, I remember kind of, it jumped me off one and landed me on another, and it was that broke
jolt.
My back.
Then
it fired me in the air, and I remember looking up at the sky thinking, ooh, I've definitely just broken my back. I heard it and I just knew. I'm like, I've got to land again in a second, and I hope it's not going to do anything more, but I've nothing I could do, so let's hope for the best. And you know, thankfully, once the kind of guys got to me, obviously had medical attention out there and so on, it didn't really dawn on me until probably when I was contemplating getting back in a car again. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was terrified because I would hate to be paralyzed. I'd hate to, you know, be dependent on other people. I'd hate to be a burden on other people. You know, such an active person and an outgoing person, that would just be my idea of a nightmare, I think. Mm-hmm. And I remember my kind of neurosurgeon, you know, and I was having some seeing a sports psychologist at the time, and you know, I was like, I'm just worried I'm not doing the right thing by getting back in a car. Obviously I'd had 4 months in a back and neck brace and all physio and rehab and stuff like that. I was like, am I being stupid? You know, if I have a bump again, am I going to be paralyzed? Like, you know, what's the situation here? And you know, she said that basically you've got like two parts of your brain. You've got your survival part of your brain, and you've got your autonomous part of your brain. Now, your autonomous part of your brain, when you're driving at your very best, that's in charge. Your survival part is just at the back. And she said, currently it's the wrong way around. You need to address the balance. Yeah, your survival part of your brain is in charge. And so you're looking at risks that you wouldn't even have contemplated before. And so she said, what do you need to do to, you know, put your survival brain out? And I was like, well, I just need to ask some pretty gnarly questions to my, my surgeon. And she said, all right, well, do it. So I arranged a call with him. And I was like, look, okay, if I have a little bump, am I going to get paralyzed? If I have a big bump, am I going to get paralyzed? If I do the exact same crash again, you know, and I went through all this kind of stuff. And he was like, if that was the case, I would not be saying you are okay to get back in the car.
Okay.
He said, if you were to have the exact same crash again, the likelihood is, if it was to happen again, it would be in somewhere else in your back. Mm-hmm. He said, that part that you've broken is now stronger than any other part of your back.
Right. Okay.
And he said, you're no more likely now to be more injured as you were before you broke your back. And so that's kind of what I needed to allow me to get in a car.
And was that like a switch? It kind of switched the brain around.
It made me be comfortable enough to get in a car again.
Right.
And I thought, okay, sweet, let's crack on. And then as soon as I got in a car, I was not taking the risk. I was assessing everything. I was thinking, if I run wide here and I'm running over a curb, because again, I was back in a three car, is this going to basically, you know, the shockwave through the car, is that going to hurt my back again? Mm. And don't even think about it, Elvis. he's about to rub on the phone. I had to kind of, it's been a process. So when was that? End of 2021. Mm-hmm. So really, start of last year when I jumped in the Porsche was the first year where I thought, okay, I'm not actually assessing everything now.
Yeah, and, brilliant. Good on you.
Yeah, it's taken a while, but yeah, I got there. And you know,
too right, you did. Understatement of the year.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's, if I could give any advice to anyone, like it's racing drivers, we want this, we want fast, we want quick fixes. And, you know, healing your bones and your body, there's a specific time it's going to take to do that. But there's no kind of time on healing your head. And, you know, there was a lot more work around kind of mental health and all that jazz. But I think it's really important that if you think you can benefit from chatting to someone, do it. And I did a lot of work last year with a mind coach. And it wasn't even any, like, you know, silly or like data led and that kind of stuff. It was just like reassurance and common sense. And you know, when your brain's thinking something stupid, she'll be like, well, why do you think that? And then she'll be like, well, have you ever thought of this, that you've already done this, you've already been successful? And it was just building my confidence back up. And yeah, thankfully it worked.
Have you ever had that same thing, Jason, in terms of, you know, where your own natural element of fear has maybe got the percentage have been wrong?
Honestly, no. But I did, probably the only time actually, no, that's not strictly true. When I'm driving, doing telly driving, I take much less risks now than I ever did. And that was probably 8 years ago. That's something switched. And I think it might have been, I had a big shunt at Brands Hatch, a start line shunt, and I hit the concrete wall, but not the flat bit of the concrete wall. There's one where there's a little exit road, and I basically ploughed in there. And I really hurt my back, but my coccyx, and it was really sore. And I underestimated by a factor of 10, what it was going to be like, you know, as I'm approached the wall, because we've all hit walls before, haven't we, Abby? And this was a different whack. And I then started to be very twitchy in the car with Tiff, with Tiff Nidell. And I just generally took less risks for telly driving. But on the racetrack, no, it didn't really make any difference. It didn't. I don't believe it made any difference.
But it's funny though, it's until you experience it, and like the same when that first question you asked, I would have Like I had a, we were involved in a massive shunt in W Series at Spa. Six cars were written off. It was huge. It was like an airplane crash. And if there was another car sat there next to my car, I'd have hopped out, jumped in there, not thought about it.
Yeah.
But I think it's the element of, because I hurt myself,
yeah,
the pain was ridiculous. And it was what could have been. And that's, it's you know, how close I came and actually how lucky I was to not go over the edge. And that's, it's the same, you know, you don't realise how vulnerable you are until it happens. Mm. So that's where, yeah, I think a lot of the work has come from. And I think that's where people need to be kind to themselves and give themselves the time to build back up.
Which actually is probably in the world of junior motorsport is the hardest thing ever, because you haven't got time.
No.
You've got to make every year count, and you've got to keep this snowball going, you know, this trajectory. But yeah, you're right. You do need it. Sometimes you do need to just take stock and think, right, okay.
But I think it's having the support. Yeah, because it's you'll be really hard on yourself. Mm. And actually this person will be like, are you kidding me? Like, you've seen what you've done. Yeah. And it's that. And if they can like accelerate that like realization in your head, and they can do it within, you know, even your off season or something like that, then that is worth its weight in gold, really. But it's, you know, these people that kind of are like gold dust. They're very difficult to find one that you'll gel with. Mm. The good ones are obviously always quite busy as well.
But the other thing on the mental side, you know, we're talking about maybe fear, for want of a better word, as being something which is maybe like a negative and might actually affect negatively your driving ability and what you do. But I suppose the other side of it is you can look at it as experience. And in that respect, especially, you know, Abby, in terms of what you do in terms of instructing, and I know, Jason, you've done plenty of instructing before. These are things that presumably you can't teach young drivers to an extent, because you can't teach experience. You know, you can't teach what that feels like to get that close to the edge or to make that kind of mistake, because you must almost have to do it to know what it feels like to therefore prevent you from doing it again.
Sometimes with kids, I don't know if you say the same, but I'm like, it just needs a crash. That kid just needs a big crash. And then it will just, because some of them have just got no fear. And then, you know, there is a bit like Verstappen. He is so confident and he backs himself no matter what. Mm. And he hasn't got any fear. I think he's an incredible driver. But there are some kids that, like, he's obviously learned to be controlled with it.
Mm.
Sometimes, and I think actually whenever he does anything he means to do it, but there are some kids where they just need a bit of a crash, or they need to have something where they go, oh, okay, right, I am a bit vulnerable in here, and then they'll be a better driver for it.
I call it an attitude adjuster. And I think with the advent of everybody's on sims now, you know, I think that builds in a feeling of, well, I'm invincible.
Right. Yeah.
And it's very different in a car. You know, where I mean, you've been off the road, Dave, haven't you?
Yeah.
It takes your breath away.
Oh, absolutely.
It?
Yeah. No, it really does. That famously, that time in the cage room at Brands Hatch, where I snapped the back axle. I mean, that was a bit of a wake up call.
It was good, you know, going, yeah.
Especially when the owner was there on the side as the whole thing got dragged over with the thing, and I sort of had to sort of say sorry about that and then disappear. Sorry,
attitude adjuster administered.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Back to more domestic things then, Abby. There's one question that we ask all of our guests, and it is this, because we like to find out what your fantasy drive would be, right? So we always say that music and cars go well together. So we need your fantasy drive, your fantasy road trip, whatever you want to call it. Where are you? Where are you going? What are you listening to? And most importantly, what are you driving?
Probably Queen.
Mm-hmm. Any particular track?
Any of them. They're all great. The car would probably be... my dream car is a 911 GT2 RS. So
a GT2?
Yeah.
Oh, you dirty devil, you.
I know. My back's going to not be happy
That's a proper... Well, that the original name for that was the Widowmaker, wasn't it?
Right. There you go. Yeah. So... I'd have one of them.
Oh, saucy.
And where would I be road-wise? Do you know what? I've not actually been on that many lovely roads, but I'd probably have to say some Alpine road in France somewhere on the way up to the top of a mountain. or even the 500 in England or Scotland, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, somewhere like that, I think.
It's a grand choice. I mean, I drove that car recently. In fact, I drove the Cup car.
Yeah.
You know, your race car, and also the new GT2 RS. Breathtaking. Absolutely breathtaking.
Yeah. And the new GT3, it is, I mean, so many cars now, they have no business being that fast for the road.
No, I know.
I was in the Turbo S GTS, the new Taycan.
Yes.
It's 1,108 PS.
Yeah.
Four-wheel drive. It is absolutely ridiculous. And like the technology in like this GT3, you can adjust suspension and torque vectoring and all. And I'm sat there in between shoots. We were doing some filming stuff. And I was just playing around with it. And like they're like calling me on the radio. And I'm like, so I'm busy. What an incredible piece of kit.
Yeah, they are amazing, aren't they? And just to think, footballers can go and drive those cars. How dangerous is that?
I know. This is the problem, because unfortunately, having the sort of bank account that will allow or afford you that kind of car doesn't make you the sort of person that is equipped to drive it, as is often the case when you see them written off in, you know, in tunnels and all sorts of things by footballers.
Yeah.
Well, I know there's some dealerships and so on where if you buy a car from them, they send you to
on a course.
Do a little like course,
which I quite think right.
is fair enough. Yeah, but if it was me and I had no kind of experience with high powered cars, 100% I'd do something like that, because at the end of the day, you're going to get more out of the car and you're going to try and keep it in one piece as well. So
I think that should be part of the law. You know, if it's over, say, 400 horsepower, or 500 horsepower, or 400 is plenty, isn't it? Then you've got to do a course, an advanced driving course.
Yeah.
Administered by JP and Abby Eaton.
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
How much do you think that would be?
A bit of an income here.
1,500 quid for half a day, I'm thinking.
Within the deposit you put down for your new Porsche, sir.
It's a mandatory option, as my dad would like to call things.
Hey, listen, on our next school outing, we can work all this stuff out and we can work out the business plan and everything. And I think on that note, Jason, I think you need to take us out.
Well, that's it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, big thanks to you, but a huge thanks to our special guest this week, the one and only Abby Eaton.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Oh, and Elvis as well. Thank you to Elvis.
Yes. And Elvis for all of his contributions.
Co-starring role. Thank you, Abby and Elvis. It's been a pleasure. Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Right, thanks for listening, folks, and we'll see you next time. Ta-da!